now that we're doing so many things on Zoom, we've learned a lot about people's bookshelves. And you see these backgrounds, and I know for me, it was one of the main motivations to completely redo and clean up my apartment was that I don't want to look like I'm, you know, in some sort of hoarder house, especially since now my apartment has become my home, my office, my gym, my recording studio. So but it's funny. I actually, because I do like to work out, I have a squat rack in my apartment now, which is
Squat rack?
Yeah. So I have squat stands and I have the weights and all that stuff.
Wow.
And I was on Zoom with my parents who even as a grown man, I can tell they're still looking in the background to see what I'm doing wrong. And they saw the squat rack and they asked what it was. And I said, oh, it's for lifting weights. And my mother's first response was, oh my God, now I have to picture you trapped under that too. And I thought too was a nice touch that she's already picturing me pinned under a variety of things in the apartment. And this gets added to the list.
That was comedian Joe DeVito, whose new comedy special, Dating Over 40 is Like Thrift Store Shopping, has now accumulated over 3 million streaming views on YouTube and Facebook combined. You can catch the full special on the Dry Bar Comedy YouTube page. I'm Gregory Day. You're listening to the Portland Podcast. You can catch new episodes with us every Wednesday from now on. Author Lindy West is chatting with us in November about her new book, Shit Actually, the definitive 100% objective guide to modern cinema. More now from comedian Joe DeVito on his regular contribution to The Greg Gutfeld Show.
You were recently on Gutfeld Show, I think the 13th?
Yeah, it was just on a couple days ago.
All right, and I've noticed whenever you were in the studio on Gutfeld, you owned the couch, so to speak.
Well, hopefully we can get back to actually being in the studio and sitting on the couch instead of doing these remotes, which they're really tricky because there's an audio lag, which is very tough on the timing, but we've been making it work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, you've also done work with Fox Radio. I believe you've worked with Kennedy. Now, who of our generation didn't have a crush on her?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Every now and then I would be on her show and I'd get a message from someone I knew from high school who would say, were you just on the news with Kennedy from MTV? And I'd say, well, a few things have happened since then, but that's essentially correct, yeah.
Right. And I'm loving your old episodes with you posted on YouTube with David Feldman. I'm really curious about that relationship because when you two go at it, when you start riffing, I get more involved as the show progresses. You have a special relationship with David, who's a very accomplished comedy writer in his own right.
Yeah. And, you know, David is someone that I only met a little over 3 years ago.
Really?
And, of course, I knew who he was. Because he already had a pretty well-established career. But yeah, there's something about when the two of us go off on one of our little tangents there that and he has such a great laugh that I really enjoy tormenting him with the most ridiculous or inappropriate thing I can say. So we have a lot of fun.
I've actually learned a lot about you from that podcast, more than I have from any interviews or your stand-up. You're very pragmatic. You come across as very pragmatic. You used to work in advertising, and you were a writer. Mm. And I think at one point you said in an interview that you were working on a book or a screenplay, and you're such a sharp wit, I have to get this book whenever it comes out or watch this film. And I'm getting great tips, too. Open kimchi over the sink. I mean, that's very important. You used to work at a video store. You have a connection to Woody Allen.
Yes, that I was tangentially involved with his case that he had back in the 90s, where, well, obviously, if I'm mentioning that I worked in a video store, this is not a recent story that I'm telling you, because I think there's one Blockbuster still open.
It's in Oregon. I actually interviewed, was a movie about it, and I interviewed the director. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They do sleepovers, I think.
You're absolutely right. It's an Airbnb now. You know your Blockbuster.
I do. Well, you know, I still have a couple of VHS tapes that I need to return, so I don't want them to come after me.
Right, right. And you just had this very successful stand-up special that's been blowing up online, monster numbers on this thing, and how deserving. And I'm really curious about the Dry Bar Comedy in Provo, Utah. They do such a wonderful job. It's a great set, huge numbers.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I recorded it for them last year, and for people who don't know, Dry Bar is a company that specializes in clean comedy. And they reach a lot of, they're marketed to Christian markets and families, and it's recorded in Provo, Utah. So that was a bit of a challenge for me. I'm not a particularly dirty comic, but there's East Coast appropriate, and then there's Provo, Utah. Uh-huh. So they mentioned how they didn't want anything that disparages marriage or anything that talked a lot about alcohol or any of that, which was fine with me because most of my act is complaining about getting older and being single. So I really didn't have to cut out too much in that regard. Yeah. But in a way, it worked out for me recently. One of the few bright spots with what's going on in the world is that they posted the whole thing online in June. And I guess because people are just so absorbed in watching media online with the quarantine and so forth, it's blown up and it's really a treat. I think on YouTube, it's over 1 million views, and on Facebook, closing in on 2 million.
I mean, we're looking at 3 million in numbers. I mean, how many comics can say that? That really is something special. And you've got a couple of comedy albums out there. You've also mentioned in interviews, and I love this quote, that comedy has to push people. I believe that's true of all art. And would you like to touch on that, like pushing people?
Sure. I think that, you know, we've seen this weird thing in comedy in particular, but in entertainment in general, that it's really no fun to reward people for what they already thought on their way in. And I don't say this, I'm not a political comic. I say that for when I'm on panel. I'd notice with people who are coming to shows that they were thanking the comics for saying, we're here to get away from what's going on in the world, to take a break and to enjoy ourselves. And they don't want to get lectured. They don't want someone to try and convert them to a point of view. So having said that, I still think that there's a lot to be said for inappropriate jokes and irreverency and saying that thing that maybe people were not aware that they even shared that opinion or that thought. And it's just fun. I mean, I think of the things that when you're talking with your friends that you laugh the hardest at, it's usually some sort of dig or something that you wouldn't want to say in polite company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're pushing the dialogue. And I think that's very important. I think that's art's job. You have been doing shows. I believe you did a show in Central Park. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
It's I always felt like there was a fine line between stand-up comic and crazy person yelling at you in public, and we've crossed it. We've fallen over that line. But the shows have been really, really fun, and I think it goes to show how people are so eager for entertainment that the audiences, they're there specifically to laugh. They're socially spread out so that, you know, there's a space, everybody's comfortable, and, you know, we all have this experience that we're reluctantly sharing. It's something people want to talk about and to mention that, hey, we have these similar experiences going through quarantines and lockdowns. And then they also want to hear us talk about our lives, our regular material. I've been pleasantly surprised by how much people just wanted to hear good old fashioned jokes.
I'd like to touch on your background because you got into comedy a bit late, right? You worked in advertising in Long Island. Yeah. Is that correct? You're a writer. And you did this on a lark, and now you're at 3 million views on your on your comedy special.
Well, it's funny that I always liked being funny, but I didn't know that you could be a stand-up comic. It just seemed like if you would just announce you were going to be an astronaut, I didn't know that you could make that choice. And it seems odd now that when I started, I was 32, and I remember at the time thinking, oh, I'm so old to be doing this. And, you know, certainly 19 years later, what I wouldn't give to be 32 again. But it's been a life-changing experience. And that's another reason why I enjoy working with the new comics is to say, hey, whatever you're hoping to get out of this, it can change your life. And for me, my life is clearly split into two parts. There's before I did stand-up and there's after. And the after part, it's just so much fun. Always loved making people laugh. And that, I think, is one of the things I'm enjoying so much about these Central Park shows, that it's bare bones, stripped down. It's just saying stuff that makes people laugh, and it's so rewarding.
And I believe at some point you did a set in the Hamptons, kind of a different location, different crowd, a totally different environment.
Yeah, actually, you know what? That show got canceled, unfortunately.
Oh, it did. It did.
Yeah.
You missed out on all those people whose summer in the Hamptons.
Well, you know, that was one of the jokes I've had about people referring to the quarantine, saying we're all in this together. Some of us are in this and some of us are in the Hamptons. You know, there's a big difference in the experience some people are having. Yeah, that's unfortunately in New York, you know, we're still shut down for a lot of even the live entertainment, and it's scary. I I'm saying a prayer for the venues, because I don't know how they're going to ride this out.
Yeah, it's really scary. Three's Comedy from 2018, a couple of years back. You did a set with two other incredible comics. Kyle Ocasio has a wicked sense of humor. She was not a soft opener, as you say. She was fantastic, and Vicky Cooperman also. The Three's Comedy album, it's an interesting concept. I really enjoyed that concept.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, what we wanted to do is, the three of us who are very good friends, and we were talking about how we wanted to get more tracks available for play on satellite radio, but none of us felt like we had a brand new album ready to go. And we said, well, why don't the three of us record it? And we did it. You know, we recorded two shows on the same night at the historic duplex in Greenwich Village. And it was great, because to go up and do just 20 minutes, oh, you can really wail on people.
It was a memorable 20 minutes. I noticed a lot of jokes about Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm curious how much time you spend in Bed Bath & Beyond.
I would say probably more than is necessary, but they keep sending me the giant coupons. I have no choice. It's 20% off.
You're still single. Is that true? Something changed? It's
still
good for your act. I think it's good
still
for your act. Do you think it keeps you sharp? I mean, because you're single, because you're still in the game. I think there's a level of sharpness. I mean, you talk about spending time in the gym. Your comedy is very relatable to me, because I'm in the same boat. I'm about your age and single, and it's not looking like that's going to be changing anytime soon. You're not talking about the wife and kids. You're not talking about the wife. I don't think there's anybody quite like you or doing what you do. You're so unique in that respect.
I think you can relate then, that with all the attention I put to dating, it never occurred to me to think, oh, I better shack up with someone before a pandemic. That really never was on my radar, that I should find someone strictly for health reasons. But yeah, I think it does set me apart a little bit, in that most guys my age are doing the wife and kid stuff. So it does put me in a unique demographic of someone who's single, but still likes to complain about back pain for long stretches of time.
And, you know, you keep sharp, you stay in the gym, and, I mean, that's very important, but you do date. That's important to you.
I do. Well, you know, I think we all want to find that that special person.
So you're still a believer. I mean, you mean that you're not jaded. You have a good attitude about it.
Yeah, I'm not a bitter person about it. And that was an interesting thing.
You don't come across that way.
No, I don't have the energy to do that. But it was funny to see some of the comments on the Dry Bar video, which a large part of it is talking about dating, and overwhelmingly positive comments. I can't complain. But every 20th or so, there would be an angry person who would write multiple paragraphs. And when I would read them, I'd think, you are revealing a lot about yourself, because whatever you're mad about was not discussed in my jokes about, you know, going on a date at Starbucks. Like, you're reading into something that was not there.
And these dates go reasonably well, or you know, something you look into like a long-term relationship? And I wonder how that would change your act.
Well, I think the good news is, as you get older, the long-term relationship becomes shorter, because you're not going to be as alive together that much longer, so that you don't, it's not as much of a commitment. So it takes a little bit of the pressure off. You know, as far as sowing the wild oats, I've seen guys my age, and if they're still in that mode, it's a little depressing that they clearly have not had some sort of experience they're hoping to have. And there's things that are cute when you see someone, a guy in his 20s or 30s doing them. But when you get to be past 40 or even 50, you should have scratched that itch by now.
Well, you're dressing age appropriate. And I think that's important. And I think it's also important to adapt to the era. I mean, it's 2020, yeah. You know, and you know, what worked 10 years ago is not going to work today. I'm actually really curious about what you're going to be writing about, you know, in this forthcoming book or screenplay or what have you. If you're into fiction, do you read a lot of nonfiction, fiction? On your Fox segments, you're in a library, yeah. But that's a setup. That's a setup. That's not your home library.
That is the new backdrop they have at the remote studio. But that is one of the things I think is funny, that now that we're doing so many things on Zoom, we've learned a lot about people's bookshelves.
Yeah, it's true.
And you see these backgrounds, and I know for me, it was one of the main motivations to completely redo and clean up my apartment, was that I don't want to look like I'm, you know, in some sort of hoarder house, especially since now my apartment has become my home, my office, my gym, my recording studio. So but it's funny. I actually, because I do like to work out, I have a squat rack in my apartment now, which is
it's not the greatest. Squat rack?
Yeah. So I have squat stands and I have the weights and all that stuff.
Wow.
And I was on Zoom with my parents, who even as a grown man, I can tell they're still looking in the background to see what I'm doing wrong. And they saw the squat rack and they asked what it was. And I said, oh, it's for lifting weights. And my mother's first response was, oh my God, now I have to picture you trapped under that too. And I thought too was a nice touch, that she's already picturing me pinned under a variety of things in the apartment. And this gets added to the list.
So yeah, I'm curious what you're squatting, if you're doing deep squats or...
not as much as I would like to, although I've been doing deadlifts in here, and I think I'm good thing I'm in a ground floor apartment, or the neighbors are going to start wondering what's going on in there.
Wow, yeah, yeah. And, you know, influences, books that you're reading or revisit?
Yeah, you know, I've been reading, I like a lot of nonfiction, so I've been reading...
me too.
Some textbooks, some medical textbooks. I have some other stuff that I'm getting ready to start here. I've got a book from Dan Crenshaw, and I've got a book about acting. I mean, I'm really mixing it up. And, you know, it's a good way to go through all these books. I feel like such a phony that I look at this bookshelf. I'm like, oh, yeah, that book's just been there for display. So. Certainly have time on my hands now, unfortunately, so you might as well make the most of it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because you're enjoying this huge social media success with this Dry Bar Comedy Special. So many people are taking notice.
Yeah.
I'm actually curious about where this leads, because I find your comedy so relatable, and you really touched a nerve, I think.
Well, you know, I would, in a way, it's frustrating, because to have this happening and think I would love to be touring behind this right now, and that's... Yeah. Not really possible, although my schedule's starting to fill back up. I mean, we're trying to make the most of places that can do shows outdoors, but it is tricky. I mean, I am in New York, and the governor is not allowing outdoor entertainment. So, but there's places in New Jersey, there's places in Pennsylvania. So I'm hoping that get the most of that out of that while you can still perform outdoors. We'll see what opens up toward the end of the year. And all you can do is get ready for this eventually being replaced by something else, for this being over.
Right. I do want to wrap it up here. I just want to ask you again, now about the comedy coaching. I'm curious if you have improv experience, because you're so sharp, you're so on the ball, and you know, Gutfeld always goes to you. He relies on you, and he has a lot of respect for you because you're so on the ball. And I'm wondering if you learned how to riff or from improv, or what you can teach in that respect. And you're just so sharp. I mean, is that something inherent? Is that something you could teach and practice?
Well, you know, one of the questions people ask with the coaching is, can you make anyone funny? And of course the answer is no. I mean, there's some people that it's some people are tone deaf, and they just can't grasp singing. I'm one of those people. I'm at least aware enough to know that I'm not able to carry a tune. But as far as, to me, it's a lot of unlocking the potential you have by getting your self-consciousness out of the way. And that was the big problem for me when I first started, where I was stage fright and all that. And
yeah, vomiting.
Then,
you were vomiting before
oh
shows.
my God, I was a mess. You know, I always tell people what I used to throw up before the open mics, and what cured me was the New York Comedy Club bathrooms are so disgusting. I didn't even want to throw up in them. So I stopped doing that. But yeah, it's, I think it's the more comfortable you get with expressing yourself and being true to your opinions and knowing the topic, then you can relax and then you can be the funny person you are with your friends. But it takes a while. You know, I'm 19 years in this, and I remember early on hearing, oh, it takes 7 years to find your voice. And I thought, well, I'll have this wrapped up in 3 years. And you know what? It takes around 10 years, even if you're a good, competent comic, to really dig into who you are. But that's where the best stuff is.
Fascinating. Thank you, Joe. Really appreciate you taking the time. I connect with your comedy in a way that I haven't with any comedian ever.
That's awesome.
And I think it's probably due to my age and my situation. But I think a lot of us out there connect with your comedy in that way because nobody else really has our backs as far as, you know, being a single man in our 40s, 50s. And you really tapped into something special here. So I really appreciate you taking the time. What a thrill to chat with you. I really enjoy your podcast and looking forward to hearing you more on Gutfeld and on the radio and podcasts and hopefully in television and reading your books. I'm a big fan. So I really appreciate you taking
right
the
on,
time.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, and it's joedevito.com and at Joe DeVito Comedy on social media. And I'm always posting some sort of little obnoxious joke on Twitter. So
right,
I encourage people to follow me.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you again.
And thank you for listening to the Portland Podcast. I'm your host, Gregory Day. I produce and edit the show. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back with a brand new show next Wednesday. See you then.